I don't know whose turn it is.
I think it's Jastin's.
I think so.
Because last time I said, last time it was both of you guys.
And what did we do the week before that?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah, because we did the Whataburger. Okay, sorry about that. Somebody decided to Fast and Furious.
The week before was Jastin, because I was like, why do you like Burger King?
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Okay.
Yes. So it is.
Good memory.
Okay, Heather.
Yeah.
A through Z.
Let's go with M.
M, 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 M.
Yeah.
M. Okay. What musical television show have I been obsessed with watching clips of on TikTok this week?
Musical television show. Musical television show.
And I'm not watching the show. I'm just watching clips of it on TikTok.
I'm just going to say The Voice because Kelly Clarkson's a coach.
No.
No.
I would just look at Kelly.
But there would be clips of her from the show. So
I know. But I also just watch her on her show.
Just to watch her. Yeah.
And that would be exclusive to this week.
This is true. You're right. Can I ask a question?
I suppose.
Is it an American television show?
No.
Okay. I don't know, actually. I have no idea.
I thought that gave it away.
Nope. It definitely didn't.
I truly thought you were asking because you might have had a sneaky like guess and that was going to give it away.
It just eliminated all the ones I could think of that were those shows. So I was like, I'm not going to get it because all the ones I'm thinking of are American television shows.
Jastin, you got a guess?
Matt, I'm trying to think of what, of something that maybe you watched. Or watch. You've mentioned some shows out of America that you like. Like, I think you said something about a British show, and I can't remember the name of it.
As he says that, I think I know what it is now. Maybe not.
What is it, Heather? What do you think?
I was going to say Britain's Got Talent.
Oh, no, no, no. No.
Oh.
No. No.
Okay. I'm sorry, Jassy. Go ahead. I was wrong anyway.
It's not coming to me, but I know you've mentioned that there was this British show that you like. I know you've said that. You've said that before.
There's a few British shows I like, but I will give you guys one more hint. This show is technically part British, but it's not exclusively a British show.
Is it X Factor?
No.
Okay.
If you're thinking of anything that also has an American counterpart,
yeah,
you're thinking wrong.
Okay.
Damn. Well,
I do not know.
There goes my guesses. Yeah, I'm done. I'm tapping out.
Eurovision.
Oh. Man. Honestly, it's because I did not realize that was this week.
Yes.
That if I knew it was this week, I would have guessed that. I just did not realize it was this week.
And in particular, the Finnish entry. I've been obsessed with watching clips of that lately. It's like this metal techno song in Finnish that also the guy just starts saying cha, 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 cha. Like it. And it's fucking fantastic. And I love it.
Nice.
The German entry was really fun. I've just been digging watching Eurovision clips. in.
I'm surprised that hasn't come up on my TikTok page. But I will search it out now.
There's also like a weird homage to Human Centipede in the Finnish one. It's very weird. I'm there for it. It's got this very weird, chaotic sexual energy to it. And I just totally dig it.
Okay.
I'll send you clips. I'll send you guys a link while we record.
Yes.
And I've just, been addicted to watching Eurovision because of that. So. That's all. I've been having fun with that. Do you guys know of any crazy news this week? I feel like it was kind of a slow week. One thing also, we did talk about the writer's strike a little bit last week. Stranger Things season, was it 5?
Yeah.
Is on hold due to the writer's strike. And the movie that at this point, I don't know if it'll ever get released, MCU's Blade, has been postponed due to the writer's strike. I don't think that movie's ever going to come out.
Yeah, it feels not likely at this point.
They just can't get it together. Yeah. They literally hired like another writer like 2 or 3 weeks ago and then writer strike. Like, I mean, they cast Mia Goth in that movie like a month ago. I'm like, how are you just casting her a month ago? You were supposed to film this movie like 8 months ago. How are you still just casting people?
Yeah. Actually, I think I do remember when they casted her. I think we vaguely talked about that.
But yeah, I just, at this point, what's his name? Mahershala Ali. I don't think he's going to stick around at this point.
Yeah, he might get a bunch of other offers.
Because he was very upset when it got delayed due to the first script being fucking thrown out. He's like, we're supposed to film in like 2 months and you're just now realizing the script sucks? What the fuck? Like, yeah, I mean, how long can they delay it? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And see, that would, if it had the right script, that would have such potential because it's Mahershala Ali. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't even know anymore. Supposedly, the rumor is that Adam Driver has been cast as Reed Richards. There hasn't been an official announcement, but supposedly it's pretty much done, a done deal.
Okay, yeah. I'm okay with that. If that does actually happen, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I think you could do it.
Yeah.
Did they have any other people they already slotted for that or no?
I mean, John Krasinski's been always the name everybody's wanted for so long, but he was never actually cast in that role outside of Doctor Strange. And then outside of that, there's really been no indication anywhere of where they're going with it.
But none of the other, like, characters have been cast or anything?
There are rumors that Margot Robbie might be Sue Storm.
Okay. I would also be all right with that.
But I mean, especially with these people, it's like, do they want to keep doing these like franchises?
Yeah.
You know, Margot Robbie did 3 movies for DC. You know, Adam Driver was Kylo Ren. You know, did 3 movies for Star Wars. I mean, I don't know. It really just depends on whether or not you want to be tied up playing one character again for another 12 years.
Right.
You know, that's what it kind of boils down to. And I mean, if you're okay with that, because you're just like, well, that's steady work and I can do other shit in between. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what it kind of boils down to. And it's just less likely for people that have come off other franchises. You know, being already tied to a role for so many years, do you want to do that again? But I don't know. We'll see. You guys got any, did you, any other news you guys thought of or heard? I mean, the NFL released its schedule today. That was nice.
Okay. Nope. I did not know about that.
I've already got a bet on a game in December.
Already?
Yeah.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah. Tennessee's playing the Dolphins on Monday Night Football on December 11th. And as soon as I saw the schedule, I texted my cousin. I'm like, December 11th, Monday Night Football, $50 says Tennessee beats Miami. He's like, you got it.
Nice. Locked in.
God, I hope my team doesn't fall apart like it did last year. We were doing pretty good the first half of the season, but then we lost, what, like 7 straight at the end of the season? I hope that doesn't happen again. God, that would suck.
Yeah.
Just be rocking and rolling and be like, oh yeah, we're going to play Miami with, I've got $50 on the line just right in the middle of us losing a shit ton of games. That'd be so fantastic. This is going to be a hard episode to record. I've got just the cutest little baby kitten in my lap right now. And I'm having to actively also hold her in my lap. Because if I move my right hand, she's just going to fall.
Oh, that's kind of cute.
It would be nicer if she would get up on my shoulder because it's easier to manage her that way. But nope, she's just right on my lap.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's going to fall asleep. So, all right, let's just go ahead and go with the episode then.
Cinema Slayers.
Hey, CineFans, and welcome back to another episode of the Cinema Slayers podcast. I'm Sterling, and as always, I'm joined by Heather and Jastin. And tonight, we are going to talk about what we like, didn't like, and everything in between with the newest MCU movie, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. We will go spoiler-free recommendations and scores, and then into a more spoiler-centric section with time codes in the description to allow you to jump around if you so require in both podcast and video formats. And with all that, let's start it off with me, the resident MCU naysayer, the the harbinger of the Marvel Cinematic Universe apocalypse, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Fairly enjoyed this one. Like, this was like kind of like a movie that helps remind you of like why people fell in love with the MCU.
Yeah.
Did a really good job of tying up the story. I think there's some things I would change with it, but for the most part, James Gunn did what James Gunn gonna do. I mean, he came in and he delivered you a really good ending to this franchise, a movie that kind of reignites some of the spark that I feel like the MCU has lost for a while, and kind of was just a return to a fun fucking movie that also has like this Technicolor like aura to everything with it too, to where it's just kind of a fun watch. It's a tad bit too long. I think there's about 15 minutes that you could cut out of this movie that I also think James Gunn would have rather cut out of this movie based on some of the things he said. But kind of had to keep it in because it was things that tied into the overarching MCU stuff. not stuff he's put in Guardians movies, but just stuff that has kind of happened with Guardians characters that he kind of also had to write into this movie. But I mean, overall, I think it's a satisfying ending. I think the new characters it introduces, they do a very good job of intermixing them without taking away from the characters whose stories you like matter the most, because this is the end of their stories. And I think he did a good job of balancing that. I mean, we talked about a character in the newest John Wick movie that might not have been the most necessary of characters. And how that character felt a little bit more tacked on than maybe necessary. This movie introduces new characters into the penultimate movie and didn't make them feel tacked on, because James Gunn is just, when it comes to characters, just a fantastic fucking writer. He knows how to add characters and blend them with the characters he's established to elevate and bring something new without detracting from what he's already established. He's so fucking good at what he does. And I just think this is just more proof of that. That if even my jaded MCU ass can have a good time with this movie, like, it shows that they did the smart thing years ago whenever they hired James Gunn to do Guardians. And if you ever had any doubt on why DC would take a chance in more or less handing the DCU over to this guy, this also settles it. This guy just knows what the fuck he's doing and cares so much about what he writes with his characters. And yeah, I just, you know, part of me didn't want to enjoy it. I wanted to not like this. I wanted to be like, see, even the MCU could fuck up James Gunn. They can't. He still came through and, you know, and I'll give credit to Marvel too. They let him do what he should have done. You know what I mean? They let him do what he needed to do with this movie. Because, I mean, I'm sure there are studio notes in this movie and all this other stuff, but it still gelled cohesively and still leaves room for the MCU to do what it does around this movie and with things from this movie. They just did a very, very good job with this movie. And even my disgruntled ass can't deny that. That in at the end of the day, I enjoyed watching this movie. And that was a good little reminder of why I enjoyed Marvel movies in the past. Justin, what about you?
Yeah. So, yeah, I liked this movie as well. I think that if the first Guardians is an A, and then the second movie is more like a B minus, I would say this is about a B, B plus. I don't think that it's not as good as the first film. It's a little bit longer, a little bit more stuffed. I did feel that there was a character that felt tacked on in this. I think even though he was set up in the previous films, what we got with that character I thought was a little underwhelming. It felt like the character was there because we promised he'd be there. We kind of set up that he'd be there, but he did feel like I just question exactly how much he added to this story.
Well, you can say the character's name. I don't think that's a spoiler with this one. I mean, it's a well-known that character's in it. I mean, that's up to you. I just don't think it's a spoiler if you say the character.
Yeah, I guess not, because it's not like we didn't know that he was coming. Well, yeah, then I'll just go ahead and say it. I felt like Adam Warlock really was, he felt tacked on to this. Like, I felt like there are parts of this film where the story, I think, is really good, especially the story that they decide to tell with Rocket Raccoon. That's the best thing about this, is that story. I really think that is the gold of this film. The rest of the stuff is just good Guardian stuff. And we've talked a lot in length about James Gunn's ability to sort of what he can do with this formula of these misfit characters, the unlikely pair, and the adventure that they go on. He's very good at that. And he just has a kind of sense of humor and a way of writing the characters and a way of progressing the story. Even just the parts where the movie slows down and it's time to infuse some comedy in that. All of that, most of that stuff lands just because these characters, whether you're talking about Batista as Drax or Chris Pratt as Star-Lord, we have just gotten so accustomed to them and they have gotten so good at playing these characters. They just effortlessly do these scenes and have these conversations, and these interactions with each other are just so good. And we have come to love them so much. It just works. It's just easy. You know, I feel similarly with like the Spider-Man cast. Of the Homecoming cast. I think I could say a similar thing about them. It's just easy to follow them and listen to them, and the interactions they have with each other are similar to kind of this. Even back to some of the original Avengers and stuff like that, like Cap and Iron Man, you could sit and listen to them talk to each other and clash in ideals and all that good stuff. You know, there are just certain characters in the MCU where we have grown so accustomed to them that by the time you get to that third movie, it's just very enjoyable. You know, that everybody just knows what they showed up to do. Everybody just understands the assignment by then. So everybody's so comfortable with each other. And I think that really showed in this. I mean, down to Nebula, Mantis, all of them, everybody just feels so comfortable by this time and what they're doing. And I think that really shows in this film. This film is a lot darker than the other two Guardians movies. And I think that a lot of that is it positive. A much darker story, but one that overall I appreciated. I think the villain is a pretty good villain in this. The high evolutionary. I think that he's a pretty good villain. I think there are parts where it sort of devolves, and it may be a few things maybe stop him from just being like top tier MCU villain. But I do feel that he was a good villain for this story. Something that didn't affect me, but after reflection and thinking about what people have been saying coming out of the movie and reacting to the movie and stuff like that, I was talking to someone and they said, I think if you're a pet owner or somebody who likes animals or something like that, or things like that, that this movie might hit you harder and might be more relatable to you if you fall into those categories. And some of the scenes of animal cruelty, because there is some. I mean, let's just call it a spade and what it is. That's in here. And there were people who struggled with those scenes. I mean, I didn't, but that is something that I sort of heard constantly, is that there were scenes with the animals that were off-putting in this movie just because of how graphic or how violent it got. Some people even saying, I don't think I should have took my kids to go see this, which is interesting. I just wonder if you guys felt the same way about that stuff. So it'll be fun to talk about some of the specific scenes that happen in the movie. So I don't know. I'm not saying that I necessarily agree with those things, but I did find it interesting and kind of wondered, could it compromise the rewatchability of this? You know, if you've got people kind of walking out feeling that way. But overall, I enjoyed the story. I really liked the story. I think that most of the time, what this movie tries to do lands. And the send-off for the Guardians, it was a good send-off for these films, these characters, everything like that. And I did like how it left things open to where you could have some MCU possibilities in the future. But the movie was not bogged down by having to do MCUing. It felt like enough of its own thing to where those connected pieces, I don't think, hinder the movie, or at least it doesn't hurt it as much. You know what I mean? It really felt, for the most part, like James Gunn was given the reins to do his own thing and tell his story, with just the exception of a few things here and there. And there are some scenes that are very memorable. There's one battle that was like in this hall, like a corridor or whatever, towards the end of the movie. And man, that scene is amazing. It's just this like long tracking shot of a bunch of action set pieces and sequences. And I thought that was like an amazing scene, you know, so there's even some visually splendid stuff in this. So overall, yeah, I enjoyed this. I got to find out a little bit more about a character that I didn't know. I wasn't mad at the characters that it introduced or anything like that. And I think for the most part, it almost just does everything right, with just a few flaws here and there, but nothing that was a deal breaker for this movie. So yeah, overall, I think it's probably the second best Guardians movie in the trilogy, which ain't bad. I think it moves up above the second one. And I think it was a very good send-off for James Gunn and him working with these characters and these characters, especially all the years we've been with these characters and stuff like that. It was a very nice goodbye for this Guardians franchise as we know it.
I do think it's kind of funny. You and me kind of graded the entire trilogy the same. Heather, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree about that. I think that's probably like one of the coolest choreographed fight scenes that I've seen in a movie in a long time. Thought it was great. So good. I really liked this movie a lot. I think I'd probably rank it along with you guys. I don't know. I feel like this one and the first one are really like really close for me as far as how much I liked them. It's just for different reasons. Like the first one, you know, you like it so much because it's fresh and it's a new, you know, a new idea at the time. And, you know, you don't know what to expect yet with these characters and who they are and what they're going to do. And then in this one, I just like all of the character development and how they've kind of grown as this misfit family. So I like them equally, but for different reasons, if that makes sense. But I don't know. I'm still deciding. I feel like on any given day, I can change if I like the first one or this one better, is kind of where I'm at right now with it. But I thought this was a really great film. I mean, I knew going into it that it was going to be, you know, an emotional film, you know, but I really enjoy just how much heart is behind this film and the Guardians films in general. Like each of them has a really great emotional connection that it makes with the audience, I think. And yeah, James Gunn is just so good at what he does. Like Sterling said, I mean, he's just, it's kind of undeniable how great he is at making films something special, you know? But yeah, I actually disagree with you about Adam Warlock, Justin. I actually really like what they did with him. I think, I mean, and again, I don't really know much about that character outside of this, but I thought he was a good addition because I think that you get a lot from him. I mean, I know we'll get into it, but like, I feel like you get it, an interesting emotional range from him in this. And I thought he was funny. Like I thought there were moments when he was just a really funny addition and his style of, you know, what he does kind of felt very in line with the Guardians film for me. So I thought he was a fun addition. But, and then, the high evolution.
High evolutionary.
Sorry. Couldn't remember.
See, now I feel like that's wrong too, but it's Justin. What
I think
is it?
It is. It's high evolutionary. I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The high evolutionary.
Yeah.
Looked it up.
My bad. I just confused everybody.
See, I hate that whenever you hear something and you're like, I know that's wrong, but then you say what it is and you're like, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought he was a good villain. I thought he was a good villain. Very unhinged in moments and very, it was interesting to see sort of what happens with him throughout this film. And I do like that it was a very rocket heavy film because, you know, I think they told that story well. And I agree with you, Justin, that that was probably one of the best parts of the film is just that story and how it was told and just kind of getting to know a little bit more about Rocket and sort of what makes him who he is in a sense. And it was just sort of a really great wrap up to this trilogy of movies. And it was darker, but it was oddly very feel good as well. it was a fun ride. It was a fun adventure. You get pretty much everything you're wanting from these movies, which is the action and the comedy and, you know, all of the Marvel-ness of it. And yeah, it's just really, it's really well done. And I think that this, I don't know. This might be a hot take, but I think that this is actually my favorite soundtrack of the Guardians movies. I really liked all of the songs that they did in this film. The first one's really great too, but I don't know. I think I liked the way that they used the songs in this movie really well. So yeah, I'm super pleased with this film. Definitely, probably, I mean, in what phase are we in? Phase four? Whatever phase we're in.
Five,
whatever phase we're in, it's the best one so far in this phase of movies for me, in my opinion. I thought it was a really great film.
Recommendations and scores?
Yep.
Recommendations and scores.
Heather, go.
Yeah, definitely recommend this movie. I think it's a lot of fun. Like I said, a lot of heart. It's got so many great things about it. There's a little bit of something, I think, for everybody in this movie. And you get to see more of these fun characters that you love, that you've been on this journey with for so many other films, and get a little bit of a conclusion to their story in a way. And I think it's really well done. And I think it's I honestly can't think of something about this movie that, I mean, I guess kind of like what Jason said, if animal cruelty is something that you honestly just cannot handle, probably, you know, take caution with this, because there, like you said, there is a lot of that. But otherwise, it's such a great film, great story, great acting. Everybody was so good in this. I will give it, I think I'm going to give it 90 Nathan Fillion understands your annoyance out of 100.
Justin, what about you?
Yeah, I recommend it also. I mean, if you like the first two, I just don't really see how you wouldn't like this one. And of the more recent movies that we've gotten, like, this is, I mean, I'm thinking about just the recent MCU films, and this is better than Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's better than what? Thor, Love and Thunder. It's better than Doctor Strange. I mean, really, you'd have to go to like last year to find some MCU movies that challenge it. Like, I don't think it's as good as Spider-Man No Way Home. And it might be right there with Shang-Chi. They're kind of probably, it's in that realm, though. Like, I think this is probably the best MCU movie probably since No Way Home. That's probably, I think, the fairest assessment I can make of it. And it's definitely at least the best one of this grouping that we've gotten so far. So, to take that for what you will, but it's good. It's a good movie. It's a good film. Just like we, you know, Heather mentioned it as too, kind of after I kind of just talked about what people said. I wasn't sensitive to anything that I saw, but just trying to just be understanding to other people, maybe I could see how if you were an animal lover or something like that, like pets and stuff, maybe I could see how some of the imagery could be hard for you. But I think it also goes, it's also worth saying that I think that this movie won like a PETA award or something like that. Like, because there is a message here overall about the importance of animals and that they matter too, and things like that. So while, yes, there are some story elements with animal cruelty, I think when the story comes around and you get to the resolution, I think overall what it's saying about animals and stuff like that is good. So I would at least say that. I think I can fairly say that for the film. So yeah, a good film, a very good film. I don't know if I would say I loved this, but I liked it a lot. It is good. It is a very good movie. And maybe some of that is just because of my investment in these characters. I don't have a lot of history with the Guardians. I didn't read the Guardians comic books. They are not some of my favorite Marvel characters. So maybe that is always going to be like an inhibitor for me. There's only so much investment. There's only so much fandom. There's only so much I can really, you know, there's places where I can't possibly go because I am not as familiar with them. So, you know, seeing Cosmo the space dog is kind of cool, but I'm not going to be that person in the theater going, oh my God, it's Cosmo the space dog. You know, I'm just, you know what I mean? That's not going to be me, you know? But would I get giddy about something like that for Spider-Man? Yeah. So I think that that's worth saying too. I think if you're a fan of this, you will, of these characters, and you read this and like you have a comic as well as a cinematic investment in this. I think you'll really like this, probably more than I did. So I think that that's just worth saying. With that being said, we'll go with, we'll say 85. Man, I had something and then I lost it because I talked too damn much about the movie. We'll go 85. Drax is forgetting that he's stupid out of 100.
Yeah, I recommend it. I think James Gunn does a really good job in this movie. I think overall it does a very good job with this movie, or everyone does a good job with this movie. I'm kind of with you, Justin. The whole animal cruelty thing didn't quite get me. Even with my affinity towards my cats and all that other stuff, that didn't really get me because I'm also a robot, I guess. I don't know. Like, it just, that didn't faze
me. I do
me.
Like how you were like playing with your cat as he's talking about that, yeah, that specifically.
Even then, I think the way they use the quote unquote animal cruelty in this movie isn't gratuitous or mean. It serves a purpose that I think overall is good, you know, like animal lives matter too. Like, you know, that just because you view something as lesser than doesn't actually mean it is lesser than in any number. You know, like it's, I think it's fine. Like it's a good message in the end. And I think sometimes movies can have things that make you uncomfortable to sell a good message. Be like, yeah, you were uncomfortable for a fucking reason because it's bad. You know, I think movies can serve a point with that. And I think that this movie did a good job of it in that regard. And I think, I mean, this is definitely to me the best MCU movie since Shang-Chi. I mean, it's crazy that, you know, Phase 5 starts with Quantumania. And then goes to this. I mean, it's like a night and day fucking difference in quality of fucking film. Like, you see one movie where they're just throwing fucking characters in left and right. And looking back on it now, they wanted to be a Guardians movie. Quantumania wanted to be a Guardians movie with the team aspects and all that shit. It wanted to be a Guardians movie. And it failed horribly. And this one did a good job. I really enjoyed it. I thought the characters were good. I did not have as many issues with Adam Warlock as you did, Justin. I had my issues with a different character. And I just think that's kind of funny. But at the end of the day, I've got the exact same score as you, Justin. This is an 85 first fucks in the MCU out of 100. and that means the official CineScore for this movie is an 87, which is our highest rated MCU movie since we started doing CineScores.
Nice.
So that would be the highest one. Spoilers?
Yep.
Yep.
Spoilers.
My issue with this movie, especially when it comes to characters, is Gamora. And that whole, we have to bring her back on the team, but it's not the same Gamora, so it's not really the same part of the team as it was. All that shit, I was not really digging any of that shit. And I felt like that was some of the weakest stuff because James Gunn has openly acknowledged he didn't like doing that shit. James Gunn has openly said he wanted to kill Gamora in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. It wasn't really meant to be Yondu that died. It was supposed to be Gamora. Marvel said no because they needed Gamora alive for Infinity War. And then they kill her and bring her back and then shoehorn that into James Gunn's, like James Gunn has to shoehorn that in. That none of that story was his. James Gunn has openly also talked about how, you know, the Star-Lord getting mad and punching Thanos and freaking out at the end of Infinity War. He's openly said that that's not his Peter Quill. Like the way he writes Peter Quill is not that character. And that kind of does a disservice to what he writes as far as Peter Quill goes in the MCU. Because he is, as much as he is a goofball, he's very smart and very capable. A lot of people forget he is like a hardcore thief that was able to go steal an Infinity Stone that people had been trying to get for ages. And he's able to dance his way through a cave and get it. Because he actually is that capable. And I like that you see glimpses of that in this. You know, like when they've got to bypass those shields to get to into that bio facility. He's just able to do it. Because he is a capable thief. He also has very good plans with how to get in and out of places. Now, they're not always foolproof because, you know, some of the other team members don't always follow the plans and they just do whatever the fuck they want. But that's also the dysfunctional funness that is the Guardians. But yeah, that was my big issue, was how that Gamora feels a little bit shoehorned into this movie. And I think that James Gunn, if he had his preference, wouldn't have had her in. He would have had her just be dead or stay dead or any number of things. And that's the way I felt a little tacked on. I mean, Adam Warlock isn't as fully developed. But to me, he felt a lot like how Mantis felt in Guardians 2. That I feel like if they do a Guardians 4, even though it probably won't be James Gunn, that's where you're going to get more fleshing out of that character. Kind of like what they've done with Mantis. You know, because Mantis feels 100% like a part of the team in this movie. And if you look back, she hasn't really been on the team that long. You know, she was in Guardians 2 for like the second half of it as part of the team or whatever. But she's kind of in Infinity War and Endgame, but those aren't fully Guardians movies. So it's not, you know, how much are they really developing her in that? You know, it's the Christmas special in this type of scenario. That's where she's mostly in it. And so I like that by this movie, she feels a part of it. And I kind of feel like that's what we'll get from Adam Warlock later. Hopefully, at least. Depends on who ends up doing any other Guardians content we might get. I really dug the High Evolutionary. I liked how fanatical he was. Because a lot of people, I don't think, understand his point in a lot of regards. I know there were some people I saw complaining about how much he kind of yelled and would just get obsessed with stuff. And I'm like, but that's what he does. Like, that's the point of him. Like, he is obsessed with creating the perfect species. Like, obsessively so. So yeah, he's going to be fanatical about that. Like, that's just kind of the traits that he brings with it. So I didn't get that. One other thing I wanted to address is James Gunn was getting a lot of flack for his wife making a very small cameo in this movie.
That was dumb.
His wife, about it. You know, was in Suicide Squad. She's in this movie as she's the woman that's on the microphone in that biolab like facility that's like guards go this way, guards go that way. That's his wife.
Everybody's the one that gets shot.
Yeah. And everybody's all like, oh, he's just casting her because he's married to her and all this other stuff. Hey, it's a fucking 2-minute cameo that she's on screen. It's fucking nothing. Two.
Yeah.
That is what James Gunn does. If you're one of James Gunn's friends and he enjoys working with you, he'll put you in all his fucking movies, even if it is just a picture. Nathan Fillion has been in James Gunn movies nonstop. I mean, Nathan Fillion was, you remember in the first Guardians when they're in that prison and Groot does the little like tentacle things up that alien's nose? That's Nathan Fillion.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Nathan Fillion is in the second one. He couldn't film on that one, but they did that thing like I talked about before with Wonder Man, where Wonder Man is an actor and a superhero. And so in Guardians 2, he was on a poster as Simon playing Tony Stark in the Tony Stark biopic. Nathan Fillion was that character, and he's in this. Like, so he's in a bunch of stuff. Steve Agee from Suicide Squad and was also, what's his name? King Shark. He was the body double for King Shark in Suicide Squad. He was Taserface in Guardians 2. The alien that they kidnap and like keep hostage that they're fighting in front of, the pink lady, that's Ratcatcher 2 from Suicide Squad. His brother, Kraglin, who is also the body double for Rocket Raccoon, is in almost everything he does. The guy that started Troma Films played an alien in the first one and is also in this. Seth Green is in this as Howard the Duck. Yeah, that's just what fucking James Gunn does. If he thinks you're cool, he wants to work with you, he'll put you in all his shit if you want to be.
But also, like, she's a good actress, too. So it's not like, oh, I'm putting this terrible person in my movie. Like, that was the weird part about it.
Yeah, that's true. But even if she wasn't a great actress, let's just say she wasn't even an actress. Let's just say, you know, she runs her own company, but she happens to be married to James Gunn. And he still put her in that role in this movie. Who cares? Even if she was just the most mediocre of actors, it's not like that's a meaty role. She's just telling people where to go on a control room.
Right.
It's not going to make or break the movie.
Yeah.
It just turns out she's also a professional actress.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been fine being any other role.
Right.
It doesn't matter. The guy that plays the High Evolutionary, also in Suicide Squad.
You're thinking of Peacemaker and you're saying Suicide Squad.
Yes. Well,
yeah.
His wife was also in Suicide Squad. And Steve Agee was also in the movie Suicide Squad. And like,
okay.
Yes. Any of the characters that appear in Suicide Squad and Peacemaker, they're also in this. Like, that's just that too.
Who was his wife in Suicide Squad?
The blonde lady from Peacemaker.
Oh, she was in Suicide Squad. I don't remember her.
Because she's just an office worker with Steve Agee.
Oh, right. That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
But that's the thing. He hires his friends a lot to do shit. More often than not, they're cameos. Sometimes they're full-fledged characters. It's no different than Quentin Tarantino and Leonardo DiCaprio or Brad Pitt or Samuel L. Jackson or Martin Scorsese with Robert De Niro and Leonardo DiCaprio. It's the same with so many people. Sometimes directors just like working with certain people. And that's fine. Like, if you're seriously complaining about her having a role in this, move out of your fucking mom's basement and get a fucking life. Like, Jesus Christ. There are so many other things in this movie that I think you could legitimately have problems with. Like, you're reaching on that one. Like, and it's not like...
Yeah.
You know, there are times, like I've said, that movies are sometimes so bad or so boring or whatever that, yeah, I end up nitpicking because this movie gave me nothing better to do. This isn't that movie. Like, this is a good film, you know? If you're nitpicking to that degree, especially just because you saw her in a fucking trailer, get over it. Just get the fuck over it. I mean, that's just... Such a weird fucking thing. Nobody's complaining that Pete Davidson's also in this film.
I didn't know that.
He was an alien guy. Like his whole face is covered. It's an alien.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. He was also a nothing character in fucking Suicide Squad.
Well, I know also, like, thinking about it too, Melissa McCarthy and her husband, Ben, I can't remember his name, they are always in movies together. Every movie that she's in, he has some kind of appearance in it. It might be super small, but it works. Like, and it's not even a big deal. Like, I don't hear people complaining about that usually. Like, you know, they just think it's funny. Like, oh, that's cute. They're married and he's in her films and whatever. But it's the same thing here. Like, I don't understand why it's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that, like, isn't it ideal that if you do have creative control over something, that you work with people you want to work with? Sylvester Stallone, that's another person in a lot of James Gunn shit. That now that I'm thinking about it. I mean, I feel like part of the reason why we do this is because we liked... I mean, me and Justin have been talking movies for fucking so fucking long now, like 20 years now. We've been talking fucking movies together for how fucking long? And then we started doing the written reviews, and then it kind of just evolved into this, you know. And it's because why? I enjoy talking movies with Justin. And then when I met Heather at the company we both worked at, that I almost said the name of, but that's a dirty place. I don't want to say its name. We talked movies. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, I enjoy talking movies with you guys. So why wouldn't I want to do this with you guys? You know what I mean? To me, it makes sense to do things with people you enjoy doing those things with.
How dare you do a podcast with people you're friends with? Like, it's just weird. Yeah.
Like, wouldn't it be a weird fucking dynamic if we fucking hated each other? Like, seriously, fucking hated each other? Be like, oh, we got to record tonight. Fuck those guys.
Right.
Be like, it's a weird dynamic. Why would you want to work with people you fucking hate? Like, I just feel like that's such a weird fucking thing to get hung up on. Oh, they're married. Okay. Nobody flipped the fuck out when John Krasinski and Emily Blunt did Quiet Place.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that was some favoritism from fucking John Krasinski. Like, unless it's a detriment to the movie, who cares? You know, like I said, if his wife was like the CEO of some company and he's like, hey, I want you to be the star of my film and you're the linchpin of everything we're fucking doing.
Right.
And different. It ruined the film because she can't act. Maybe you have some criticism there.
Yeah. But the fact that you're married to like one of the best actresses around right now, like, why would you not? Like, honestly.
And either way, she's on screen for 2 minutes. Who cares? I don't want to knock her acting skills because I think she is a very good actor. But I could have done her part in this movie. I'm practically doing most of it now. I'm sitting at a microphone and talking.
I mean, honestly, even Nathan Fillion's character, like anybody probably could have done that role, but he brought his own little special thing to it.
Well, so. He's got a little bit of charm that helps sell that whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean,
that's true.
The most acting I'd have to do in the role she was in is act like I got shot. I mean,
and you can just emulate when your cat clawed you. Ah. Yeah, just do the same thing when your cat clawed you earlier.
Did it. Nailed it. Who cares, people? Just get over it. I don't know why that bothered me so much. I'm like, there are things you can criticize in this movie. That's not one of them in any way, shape, or form. The fact that somebody thought it was, I think, is what is the most mind-boggling to me. Especially with James Gunn. That is the weirdest director to call out about this. Because everyone knows he does this. Everyone. It's what he's done forever. I mean, he used to be married to, what's her name? Jenna Fischer from The Office. They used to be married. That's why she's in fucking Slither. I mean, come on, guys. So weird. But back to this movie. hallway fight sequence that you talked about earlier, Justin. If that was like people and that was human blood everywhere, this would easily be the most violent MCU movie ever. Holy fuck. He went for it. Then that shit with what Rocket did to the High Evolutionary, and then the shit that the Guardians did to the High Evolutionary. Once again, I hate to say this, but where was Kevin Feige when he's sitting there calling Moon Knight the most brutal fucking thing the MCU has ever done? And then this shit comes out? Come on. This was the most brutal MCU movie out there. They get away with it because it's alien blood. And for whatever reason, if it's just a different color, they're like, oh, you slaughter, completely maim and disfigure and slaughter a bunch of aliens, and you get their orange blood everywhere? That's fine. It's orange blood. That's not as detrimental as red human blood. Oh, no. It's still violence with a shit ton of blood, people. It is the same. Our standards for movies are just fucked. But it was fucking great, wasn't it? And whenever they showed the High Evolutionary with his face all fucked, I was like, Marvel? Where did this come from, Marvel?
What happened here?
Maybe I do need to see the Blade movie that I don't think will ever come out. It might be just a blood fest, and I'm for that. It's a Blade movie. But this movie was incredibly violent. And I was 100% there for it. I thought it was fantastic. And the cinematography of that fight. I love the way James Gunn does Guardians fights that are like team battles. That, you know, going from one team member to the next and sometimes doing tag team moves and this and that. And just kind of doing a flow through the characters. Yeah. Like, it goes from Rocket to Gamora to Nebula to Star-Lord, back to Rocket to Drax. It's just a really cool way of doing it. And then they just do a very fast-paced version of it at the end when they're just destroying the High Evolutionary. It's just so fucking great. And I will say this. One joke they had throughout this movie that is just a sneaky, good, solid 100% joke was Cosmo just being so upset that Kraglin said she was a bad dog.
Yeah, that was funny.
And would not say she's a good dog. That was a super solid joke to me. Just the way it would go in and out of the scenes and just the way other characters would be like, just say she's a good dog. And he's like, no. I won't.
Yeah, it was funny.
And then the way they did it throughout the movie just kind of made that little scene at the end when he's like, you're a good dog, kind of just heartfelt and sentimental.
It paid off. Yeah.
It adds a little bit of heart to this moment that is just a joke throughout the movie. And I thought it was super solid. I really, really kind of dug that.
Yeah, I liked it.
And there's also something to be said about seeing weird squid humanoid people selling meth. I never thought I was going to see that in an MCU movie. I didn't think I was going to see that in a movie in general. Solid in Guardians 3, though. I mean, just kind of weird. The last thing I'll say is one of the more special things that I think James Gunn did in this movie was weirdly how he took Rocket out of the movie for what? 3/4 of it? But the movie was still about him and about his story. And how that still, like, that type of thing still unifies the whole team. I'm like, how can a character be essentially in a coma for so much of the movie? And it's still about them. I know most of it's in flashbacks. But it's such effective storytelling. that you're able to take a character out and still have them be the most important character in your movie. That shows such an amazing grasp of storytelling and narrative and character development and character relationships. It was just so fucking great. So great. Heather, what about you? What are some spoilery thoughts from you?
Yeah, I do agree with that too. Like, I was thinking about that as well, how he, it's one of those where, yeah, Rock gets out of it for a lot of the movie, but you still see that it's about his team and his family being like, we got to save him. And so just everything that they do is really based on and focused on Rocket. And I thought that was cool. I also really like that at the end, he did get to learn that he was a raccoon. Well, you know, I thought that was a really cool nod where he's like, I'm a Rocket raccoon. I thought that was a cool moment. Yeah. I mean, and I've always been a fan of Rocket in the movies. He's been probably one of my favorite of the Guardians. So I really appreciated just what they did with him in this movie. I mean, I think for me, yeah, I think that, I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm somebody that's just like animal cruelty really, really like gets me or anything like that. But I think just because, you know, I'm invested in these characters and, you know, they're cute little animals and, you know, it was sad. But again, yeah, it's, there are people that I know, like specific people that I genuinely would have to be like, no, you can't watch this movie because you're going to absolutely hate that what they do. Like, you know, so it's just, there's levels of it, you know, tolerance levels. But I think that it was effective storytelling. And I think that it actually just with what I had heard online, and I don't know, this might sound weird, but it actually wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be based on what I had heard. So, you know, I was expecting a lot worse, like with showing more of, you know, what happens to these animals. But in either case, like, I feel like it was important to know what happened, and it was important to understand, sort of like what they say in the movie, it was important to understand what had happened to Rocket and understanding, like, this is why he never wanted to talk about, you know, his, you know, when he was younger, his backstory or anything like that. And yeah, it was just really, I loved everything about what they did with that story. And I really also enjoyed like the moment that Nebula had in this, where she was so relieved when she heard him speak and that he was alive. And she was, it was just like this moment of almost breaking down, and it's Nebula, so you just don't expect it, right? But I thought that was a really cool moment that they gave her, of she's actually really started to care about these people and these, you know, these things that she's with all the time. Like, she's started to care and be a part of this group. And yeah, just the fact that she was like moved at the fact that he was still alive and she was actually really worried about it, I thought that was a really great way to show emotional range from her and growth from her as well. So it feels like all the character stories and all of the growth you get from these characters, they're all intertwined, and it's really cool how they did it. And even the moment with Mantis, when she's talking to Nebula about Drax and why he's actually very important, even though she's like, you know, he's stupid and whatever. I loved that moment when Mantis was like, he makes us laugh and, you know, all these things, like he's funny and he's kind and like, that's why he's important. And I loved that moment because, you know, I think it was just a really cool way to show that there are other qualities that people can have that make them important to a team, that, you know, and I just loved that they brought that moment up. And I also loved that they got to portray Drax as somebody who's not just dumb. Like, when he tells Nebula, like, you know, you never asked me if I knew what they were saying, or whatever it was he said with those kids that he could understand. He's like, she's like, I didn't know you could speak to them. And he's like, well, you never asked. And I love that it's like, he's always been so misunderstood as this really dumb thing. And he's not, you know, he's just smart in a different way than they are. And I really loved that they added that into this movie, because I think that that's also very relatable to a lot of people who might feel like, well, what special skill do I have? What would make me a benefit or, you know, important to a team or a group or anything like that? And it could be something like that, where it's like, well, you know, you don't have this skill set, but you have this other one that's also equally important. And I really just love that they incorporated that into Drax's character. And I loved at the end too, where even though obviously everybody sort of disbands, goes their separate ways, you still see that each of them has their own like growth on their own path that you could tell is gonna, you know, really be the thing that makes them happiest. And so I like how they did that as well. One thing I was wondering though, based off of the Christmas special, was that they didn't show Rocket with Bucky's arm that he got as a Christmas present. And so I wasn't sure why that was, because I was like, he got Bucky's arm. Like, why didn't he use it? Where was it in this whole thing? So that was my only question that I had about, like, after I saw the movie, I was like, where was Bucky's arm? That was such a big deal at the end of the Christmas special. But yeah, that was one thing though. So, I'm trying to think what else.
As far as Bucky's arm, my personal theory is I thought that was Nebula's new arm. Like her arm that she could turn into a gun and stuff like that. I thought he modified Bucky's arm for her. Because he does say, like she says, that Rocket upgraded her arm. So that's okay. How I took it. Whether or not that's confirmed or not, I don't know. But that's just kind of how I looked at it. Because it kind of had some similar properties to it.
Okay. That's fair. And that would make sense too. And that could be a reason why they feel like they're close, is, you know, their connection in that sort of way. And yeah, that's a possibility, and you're probably right, but I didn't think about it. That'd be really cool though, if that's what they did with that. So yeah. And I think that there were so many moments in this movie where I was like, I was just so prepared that somebody was going to die. I was just so ready for that, and just how everybody said, oh, this is going to be the saddest thing and all of that. And the fact that none of them did was surprising, but also at every turn throughout the movie, I was expecting it to happen. Like at the one point when Nathan Fillion shoots Drax, like I thought he was going to die at that point. Like, I'm like, I have no idea who's going to be dying here. And, you know, I thought obviously at one point Rocket was going to die. I thought that Star-Lord was going to die. There were just so many people that I was like, oh, they're about to die. They're about to die. Like, nobody's going to be alive at the end of this movie. So I'm actually pleasantly surprised that they didn't feel the need to do that to close out this story. And in a sense, they did have like a happy ending in a way. And then it kind of, it pushes it forward. It moves the story forward. It moves the films forward in a way that you can appreciate. So yeah, that was, I thought that was done really well as well. And yeah, I mean, I think I'm trying to think if there's anything I could say was like a flaw. I mean, I get what you mean, Sterling, about it is quite a long movie. It's probably a little bit too long, but I'm also trying to think what I would even take out of the movie. Like, there's not, I get what you mean about the Gamora stuff. That probably is the weaker story point of the movie, but I still liked them having that piece in there, because I think that in the film, she does play an important part of helping save everybody. So yeah, I don't really know what I would take out of the movie But I do agree that it could have been just a little bit shorter than it was. Yeah, I think that, I don't know, it just was, it felt really good at the end. Like, I left this movie and I was satisfied with how they sent everybody off. And yeah, I think, see, and Sterling, this is my question for you. Do you still feel like voice acting isn't acting? Because I think Rocket was pretty great. Even when he was like, when he broke down and started crying when they shot Lila. I mean, that was really sad. And it was just his voice. So
it wasn't just his voice, though. It was also the animation they did with it.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that was Bradley Cooper fake crying. We don't know.
I feel like it was. I don't know. I could be wrong.
But that's my issue with it. Is we don't know. That could have just been, you know, that could have been James Gunn fake crying for all we know. And you're giving the emotional weight to it.
Hey, I'm just saying that I would believe that being Bradley Cooper breaking down and crying, because it's Bradley Cooper and he could do that and it would be believable. So
yeah, but it also helps that you have like a really good CGI raccoon that's also sad looking. I mean,
yeah, that raccoon, man, Rocket's so cute though. Rocket is so cute. And I, yeah, they did a lot of fake out. They want you to think that they're going to die and they don't moments, but I don't think that it was unwarranted. Like, I do feel like he used that properly in this movie. Because it pulls at the emotional strings that it wants you to pull at. But there's the satisfaction of like, oh, great, they were saved, but for a good reason, or saved in a right way. And I also think that, I mean, I think Chris Pratt does a good job of being Star-Lord, but there was something about him in this movie that I thought he did a really great performance here. And I think it's because he's a little bit more like, he's grown. You could tell he's grown with what he's been through and all of that. And even though he is still goofy and silly and all of that, you know, even the moment, like, for example, when the ship is coming at them and they're about to get hit and he's just like, hey, listen, whoever's in there, do this. Like, it just felt very real, felt very in the moment. It felt, I feel like he was starting to own up a little bit to being more serious in the moments that he needed to be. And it felt earned and it felt, it just felt like you felt the growth from him in his responses to things. Because yeah, even in the elevator moment when he's talking about how he fell in love with the old Gamora and whatever, and he even takes that moment and he says something about how, yeah, but lost my temper and I almost killed half the world and whatever it was. It's like he kind of owned up to it. And maybe kind of like what Sterling was saying about that wasn't really what James Gunn would have done with him. Maybe that was his way of trying to like rectify that. But in either case, I thought it was a fun little nod or a good moment to put in there where you feel like he gets the things that are his downfalls and you feel like he's grown from them in this movie. So I like the character development a lot of Star-Lord in this movie. So yeah, I think, yeah, I would, it's a fun film. I would definitely watch it again. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
You brought up one thing I did forget to mention earlier, Heather. Karen Gillian as Nebula. Just chef's kiss.
Yeah, she's so great.
She was one of the only things that I did like about Infinity War and Endgame, and this was a movie she just kind of reinforced why. She was one of my favorite parts in that. She was just utterly fantastic, this whole movie. Justin.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I thought Nebula was definitely one of the great things about this. I guess to go back to talk about Rocket for a little bit. I think that I thought that it was great that they did focus on him and his origin story and things like that, because up until this point, we had only gotten just bits and pieces of it. We kind of knew what happened to him. We knew that he was a science experiment and things like that. And that's why he was like this humanoid raccoon and everything. And the fact that he didn't even know that he was a raccoon, that that's actually what he was. And even in the second movie, I thought about that conversation that he had with Yondu, and Yondu's basically telling him, you're me. You hide this broken heart behind this hard, tough exterior. And, you know, that was something that Yondu recognized, and they had a conversation about that in the second movie. So they had always been kind of giving you these little tidbits, but actually getting to see what the story that he is afraid to talk about, and just how much that affected him and everything like that, it really puts into perspective why Rocket is the way he is. And also why he cares so much for the Guardians, for Groot, everything like that. You really got to see kind of why he is the way he is. So I thought that that was great. I just really loved all of that. And yeah, even though he was in this coma for the majority of the film while they were on the quest to find these things, I liked, it was very smart storytelling wise to just put little bits and pieces of that origin story throughout the story. So it never really felt like he was gone. Like, you got these little flashbacks of him, and that was so intriguing, and they were doing such a good job with that. You just wanted to go back to the flashes and see what else we were going to find out. And even though you pretty much had an idea that, okay, this is probably not going to end well for Rocket and his friends, you know, you kind of knew that you felt that something bad was around the corner. But I liked where those scenes were placed. I think that it was really smart. Like, if you had put all of that origin story together in one portion of the film or something like that, I don't think it works as well. I think that that was just a very good decision to sprinkle that throughout the movie. So that was a very good decision by them to do that. It's interesting that what you talked about, Sterling, with how James Gunn felt about Gamora and the dying and the coming back, and he actually wanted to kill her in the second movie and everything. That's all very interesting stuff. I mean, I guess if I had James Gunn in front of me, I would just tell him that I liked what he did with her. If that was him winging it or him trying to force something, I like her because of what the character journey that it did for Peter Quill. This story, I like how it was teased that this was going to be a story about them getting back together, maybe him winning over this new Gamora and everything. But what it wound up being was this story about Peter moving on. You know, it was a story about him moving on and making that realization that the Gamora I loved was really gone, and that this is not going to be something I can have again, that he had to move on. So I like what Gamora does, this Gamora, I should say, does for his character in this. I like that it was used as a way for him to move on and to show that even though she is not the same person as before, she still found a family. She still found some people that accepted her. It's just that rather than the Gamora finding the Guardians, the original Gamora that died, finding the misfits in the Guardians, she found it in, what are they called? The Ravagers? She found it in the Ravagers. So all of that kind of worked for me. It showed it to me. It kind of reinforces the whole thing with the alternate timelines and possibilities and stuff like that. Like, in this scenario, she finds the Ravagers and not the Guardians. But I thought it was still good that Gamora was there, because Gamora has been there for all of this stuff. You know, she was in the first two movies. She was in the Infinity War and the Endgame and all of that kind of stuff. She's just kind of become a familiar part of what is Guardians. So I don't know. I'm not saying James Gunn could have wrote something better, but I think it would have kind of sucked if Gamora wasn't there, you know? I wonder what Peter Quill's story would have been had she not been there. Like, what would he have been doing in this film?
I think it would have still been mourning her and moving past it. You know, like, you still, the opening would have been the exact same. Him still, like, being drunk off his ass and all that shit. I felt like a lot of that would have been the same. It just would have been without her there. It would have him, like, I think the whole thing of losing or almost losing Rocket showed him that you can't focus on what you've already lost all the time. You still also have to, you know, like, look at what you have right now also. You can't always look at what you've lost. You have to look at what you have. And if you, you know, and not take that for granted, you know, because if you take that for granted, you might lose it too. And then you would have lost out on what you had, you know. I think you still could have done his story of, and then at the end of the movie, finally having accepted that she's gone, kind of the same way. It just wouldn't have been with her there.
Yeah, I got you. And that's why I said, now, could he have wrote something similar to that? Yes. But then those things would have to have been being bounced off of somebody else. Maybe Nebula could have been that character or something like that. But what I was getting at is that I thought it was effective that Gamora was there, because then it was just easier. I think that all of that is easier to convey because we are seeing him interact with this Gamora and seeing what is happening to him and seeing what he's doing. I just feel like it would have been a little more difficult to tell that story without her there and doing the stuff with Rocket and doing everything else that you had in this movie. I just wonder how much more difficult that would have been for that to come across with what we were doing with the whole Rocket thing. I just think Gamora being there helped it. You know, that visual of them talking back and forth with each other, him having to come to grips with this is not the same person. It just all worked for me. So that's all. I'm just saying that if this is something he had to wing or throw in at the last second, well, then that is some hella good last second fan-doodling writing, because I thought it was pretty good. You know, I thought it was pretty good. I never once did I feel like, oh, she doesn't belong here. I just feel like it would be even weird to have that feeling because she's been in everything else that's involved with the Guardians. So I just didn't feel that way at all. And that's all I wanted to say is just, that's how I just sort of like took what was happening with her. And if that is the result of him just saying, well, I have no choice but to have her in here, so I'm just going to do the best job I can with her, even though this is not my original vision, then again, it's really more of a kudos than it is anything. Bravo to him for making that almost seem seamless and still having it contribute to the character development of Peter Quill. So
that's fair.
I think he did a good job with that. Now, Adam Warlock.
Well, Before you move on, there's something I have to say that ties into directly what you were saying. Another funny thing that James Gunn almost had to shoehorn into this movie, that he actually thanked Taika Waititi for fixing for him and taking the bullet for it, was after Endgame, Thor is a part of the Guardians of the Galaxy. And he actually thanked Taika Waititi for taking a bullet from him, because he's like, I would have had to write Thor out of this movie in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm so thankful I didn't have to do that.
Well, there you go. There you go. So yeah, man, it's just crazy how, like, how with all of, I guess really it just goes to show just how difficult it is to do all of this and connect all of these stories and to have these different writers and directors take these different characters to do some big combined story and stuff like that. And I mean, it's interesting. It's like hearing him say those things and you kind of telling us that, it really just brings to light just how difficult of an undertaking this probably is, you know, especially when you're dealing with artists and them having their own visions and interpretations, et cetera, et cetera, and doing the different movies. And then this is a whole nother dynamic of taking characters that maybe you didn't direct to begin with, but then having them in this combined movie like an Infinity War Endgame, and then sort of you being entrusted to portray these characters, even though you didn't like start with these characters or telling the story with these characters. So that's very interesting. And it almost just speaks to just how like miraculous this whole Marvel thing is, like how they're able to get so many minds, so many people, so many directors to do all of this and for it to be as good as it has been. Sure, there's been a dip in quality here and there. People like and hate certain movies, TV series, et cetera, et cetera. But overall, I mean, wow, look how far and how many years and how, like, for the most part, cohesive the story is. You know, to get to have characters go for this long and to get you to invest and care about characters that long, despite all the different directors and artists that have been like a part of this, that just seems like a miracle in and of itself. You know what I mean? But that's interesting. Yeah, he was like, man, I'm glad I didn't have to write out Thor. You know, it's funny because you would think that, I guess it just kind of, you know, you think that there's more like planning involved in this than maybe there actually is. You know, you think that, man, they sat everybody's in the room together getting debriefed on, okay, this is what we need here. This is the story you need to tell. This is what we need in this phase and that phase. And I guess this goes to kind of hearing him say that just kind of goes to show that, nah, man, not all of this, it really is as cohesive as we thought it is. You know, not all of it is as properly planned as we thought. You know, I guess some of this, people are given a little bit of a free rein and then they come back afterwards and say, okay, how are we going to connect? You know, it's just not as a well-oiled machine as I thought it was, you know, I guess the realization I'm making with that.
I think they try to take it one movie at a time in some regards. Like when things happen in this movie, if it affects another movie down the line, they deal with it then. Like they try to let the person come up with whatever story they're going to come up with and then alter that to fit the overall scheme. Well, you know, like, oh, okay, this character's gone because this movie, they died. So we'll rewrite that. We'll make it a different, you know, like little things like that. I think that's the game plan they're trying to do, is let the people, especially the ones like a James Gunn or a Taika Waititi or even a Peyton Reed, you know, let them write the story that they want to write or their team write or whatever, and then just tweak it. You know, especially the people that have been in the MCU, they let James Gunn write a movie and then go, okay, well, we got to change this, this, and this, you know, to fit the overall scheme. That type of situation, because let him do what he does, you know. And I think James Gunn really benefited in the first two movies because they were completely separate from everything else, because they were the only things in outer space. Everything else was all happening on Earth. He could just got to do whatever the fuck he wanted for two movies without any real consequence or whatever.
Yeah,
because they were separate it wasn't until Infinity War that they were brought into anything else. So,
yeah, that's a good point. And I guess maybe that also speaks to why some of the films, why people are higher on certain films than others. Maybe the more things are mixing together and stuff like that, really the harder it is. Or maybe there's a dip in quality, you know, maybe just a director kind of having free reign and free creativity. You might get something a little bit better. The effort probably is going to be different. Whereas when it's something where, well, you're coming in and you've got these characters that have done this and this director who did this with this character. Now you got to somehow tie all that together and do this, that, and the other. So I can see how difficult that could possibly be. But also, yeah, I guess that would be the easiest way to do it, is to let a director write what you want to write. And then the studio will come in behind you and say, okay, you're going to have to add this. You're going to have to take away this. This character can't do this because we need the character to do that later. I guess that does make a lot of sense. And maybe that kind of mirrors what happens in comics anyway, with different writers, different artists, different people writing the stories. You know, if Jeff Loeb has something that they want to do with Batman or something, I'm pretty sure, he would have to talk to somebody like Jim Lee or something if he's taking the story after him or whatever the case may be. You know, I don't know. I guess that could happen in this medium because you're dealing with so many characters in this like vast universe. So I guess that shit's bound to happen. But anyway, I just found that fascinating with you saying all that.
And you've got to have the editor, which is the Kevin Feige, that kind of like, you know, is Steve Ditko back in the old Marvel days and stuff like that, where if you're doing things that's like, oh, well, you know, Spider-Man's doing this in this story, but then in this Spider-Man story or this crossover event, he's doing this. He's the one that negotiates between the two. Like,
yeah,
let the writers do their thing and go, hey, because of this, we need to change this. Like, that's going to increase your likelihood of success, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of, because if you're going to get directors like a James Gunn, or, you know, even though it wasn't a good movie, I can't remember the name of the lady that directed Eternals. You know, she'd come off Nomadland and stuff like that. Like, let them make the movie that they're going to make, you know? Like, Sam Raimi's Doctor Strange, for, you know, better or worse or whatever, the aesthetic of the undead Doctor Strange at the end of that movie is 100% Sam Raimi aesthetic. And it had Sam Raimi humor throughout the movie. Yeah, you're not going to hire Sam fucking Raimi and go, no, you're making this movie the way we wrote it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You want that artistic, and you want that artistic difference, and you want it to feel different from the other stuff. So, yeah, it all makes a lot of sense. It really does. So to Adam Warlock. Now, with him, I don't want to be misconstrued. I'm not saying that he was a bad character in this. I'm not saying that he was trash or garbage or anything like that. But he did feel underdeveloped in this. You know, he comes in, especially with like what they started in the previous movies. It really seemed like, Warlock's going to be a big adversary in this next movie coming up. And that was all but what? Maybe 30 minutes of this film? Like, because he comes in and, you know, he tries to get Rocket. That doesn't quite go his way. Mom's yelling at him and stuff. And some of those scenes are funny. You know what I mean? Like, some of those scenes, and the actor was doing a good job as him. And I did laugh at some of his scenes and how awkward he was and everything like that. But we just didn't really get into him much. So I just found it harder to invest in him than everything else that it was doing with everybody else. Because I didn't have that previous like investment in him because we barely got a little bit of him coming in the second movie. So, and because we needed to spend so much time with Rocket's origin and really get his story, that's the character we invested in. So all of that makes sense. But then on top of that, you were adding some of these newer characters also. So it felt like of the newer people that were in this, he had the biggest hype coming into this. And it felt like he was done the less with, given the hype that was sort of there with him coming in. So I felt like it felt a little disjointed, man. And whenever they were like, okay, well, you know, he wasn't completely developed. He was taken out of the, the makeup or the experiment to make him, or the concoction, whatever it was, his making, he was taken out early because his mom wanted him to get to, Guardian smashing and whatnot. I just wish I had a better understanding of what exactly was incomplete or what was kind of the vision with him, other than him just being, we want you to go smash the Guardians up. Because what they set up with the high society and everything like that originally was that they didn't like to get their hands dirty. They were all behind these video game monitors, you know, flying around, not really trying to get involved. I mean, even when his mom in the second movie came to another planet, she was walking on carpet. Like, she wouldn't even walk onto another piece of land and stuff like that. So I just thought that some of those characteristics might tie into Warlock a little bit and the way he is and stuff like that. But I just felt like none of that really tied in because we didn't really have time. So he'll be in the movie and then he would be gone for these long stretches and then he would be back and then he'd do a little something or his mom died and now he's gone for a little bit of a stretch again and then he's not really doing anything. And then, I mean, who didn't know that he was going to when Peter was drifting out of the space, who didn't know that he was going to be the one to come and save him?
That was the most anticlimactic save ever. Because just like, well, of course, the guy we've seen fly through space multiple times this movie that is standing right there watching this guy float in space. To me, it would have been a funnier ending if Adam Warlock's like, nothing I can do now.
Yeah.
And Peter Quill just died.
And they're like, Warlock, you could have saved him. And he's like messing with Cosmo or something. He's like, oh shit, you know, like,
or he's playing with that little animal thing that he had his pet or something.
He could have just been like, oh, I didn't think of that. Like,
yeah,
that
was,
like, mother's the one that always told me what to do. I didn't think of it.
Like, yeah,
that would have just kind of been the darkest but funniest ending I could have that could have happened.
That would have been your perfect ending to
it. Because I would have been laughing my ass off if that had happened. If he's just
everyone
like,
else would have been like, what? What do you mean Star Lord's dead now? And you would have been like, yes, this is great.
But it was so funny how he died. Because I mean, especially because of what he had done earlier in the movie in that interrogation scene where he just fried the fuck out of that guy. That got a chuckle out of me too. That was funny. I was just like, yeah, he killed that guy. Like,
show up, we be business. Show up, we be business. And then he just fried him. And then she was like, that's not what I told you to do. And she was just weird in this too. Like, how could you expect this fool to know anything? He was like just born. Like,
well, I mean that's part of the arrogance of that society. But then also, yeah, High Evolutionary addresses that when he's like, aesthetically, they're perfect, but they're dumb. They're a bunch of morons. Like, and I thought that that's kind of what tied into it, like, really well with it. That, like, that he, like, the Adam Warlock was the experiment of the experiment. So I kind of liked the camaraderie he had with the Guardians without knowing he had it. And then they just kind of came together, you know, because, you know, when you're just a weird space reject, of course, you end up being a Guardian. Like, I kind of like that. That's their backstory is like, yeah, we're space rejects.
That's true.
We culminate together.
I also really like that he was when he did kill the guy and the pet was upset and he's like, he's very sad or whatever he said. It's like, I don't like how it's making me feel. Like, he just said no idea of like emotions. It was so funny to me when he did that.
Yeah. So, like I said, I didn't hate everything with him. It just felt, and then I don't know, it was just like what we were shown with them from the second movie, it just felt like they were going to be a lot more formidable. And then you sort of get to this movie and they're exactly what you said. They're just the experiment of the experiment, and they just kind of are now these just silly experiment things. The second movie, they felt way more formidable than that. But so it was just kind of a sharp turn for me. Maybe that was part of it too. It just felt like a sharp turn. I guess I thought I knew what I was getting kind of with them. It felt like they were going to be like a formidable part of this. And then they just kind of weren't. So maybe that was just a bit jarring.
I think part of it is physically he is formidable. It's just the fact that also he's like a week old. And so he's still also like as he develops, he'll probably be, you know what I mean? He would be that exactly what you're talking about, Justin. I think one of the things that kind of hurts Adam Warlock in this movie is how tonally dark this movie is. And he's just kind of silly.
Yeah.
And I think if he had been in a Guardians 1 or a Guardians 2, that character fits a little better. It's just this movie is so tonally dark.
Yeah.
That maybe that's why it wouldn't sit well. Because, I mean, I'm the exact same way with Gamora as you are with him. I didn't hate everything with Gamora. That running gag they have with Gamora and Groot, I thought was fantastic. When she's you're making it up, right? You don't know what he's saying. You're making it up. And then at that scene, whenever he does the I am Groot, and she's just like, yep, you're right, buddy. And then that look on her face of like, oh, fuck. I understood you. Yeah. Great fucking scene. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think I'm kind of the same way with Gamora as you are with Adam Warlock. I don't hate the character in this movie. There are several good scenes with them. I just don't think... To me, it latched on with Gamora, kind of like how Adam Warlock didn't fully latch on with you. You know, I think it's very similar. And I kind of think that that's why we end up scoring it so much the same. I think for the most part, we agree on the movie. It's just Adam Warlock didn't latch with you. He latched with me. Gamora didn't latch with me, latched with you. And so we only have the like one character. We're like, that was kind of weak.
Yeah.
And so that's the big point.
Essentially, that is what happened. Yeah. I didn't really make that connection till you said it. But yeah, that is probably why we both landed on 85.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, was he bad enough? Was any of that bad enough to really be a deal breaker for this movie or anything? No. He just winds up becoming another piece that they decided to just make fun or just make funny or things like that. Just like Cosmo and the bad dog gag and stuff like that, you know, and honestly, when you have all of these other characters that and you have these main, but you have this group of main characters that you're trying to develop, that's probably the smarter way to do things. You know, focus on the main ones that we're invested in and everyone around it can do some things, but they can't be as impactful as these other characters. You know, ultimately, the movie probably succeeds more because he decided to do that. You know, it probably does. If you had tried to have a very developed Warlock story trying to coincide with all the dark tonally stuff that was happening with Rocket Raccoon. I mean, I'm not saying James Gunn, he might have the skills to do that. He probably could have taken a third hour and done that and it had been okay. But man, that would have been hard to do.
Well,
you know,
I think the only way to do that is if you focus more on Adam Warlock and you make Rocket's backstory, you flip the proportions. If he had done that with Adam Warlock and him be the central focus of the movie, and Rocket's backstory is the side story, you know, took up the same amount of time Adam Warlock did in this movie, I think it would have been a bad movie. And I think you would have pissed off a lot of people that all of a sudden it's the end of the, you know, James Gunn Guardians trilogy. And you focus on Adam Warlock and Rocky was the side, you know, a back character. I think he did the smart thing by, if you're going to introduce this character, mitigate them a little bit more to the side because and focus on a character that fans love. And make it about them and do that because that's how you get a satisfying conclusion and not, you know, focus too much on Adam Warlock. I think he just wanted to do Adam Warlock. I think he had promised him, you know, in the second movie, he hinted that he was going to come and he still wanted to do that. And I think he just kind of threw him in as a side character, hoping that that's a character that develops later. Like we get a more fleshed out Adam Warlock in a Guardians 4 or 5. You know,
yeah. Or he would have had to have been the principal antagonist. That's the only way it probably could have worked. If Warlock and his mom were the main antagonists, then you would have him on this opposite side being developed because we're finding out about their villainy and whatnot. And then you could have developed Rocket's story. Maybe that could have coincided and we're on the quest against them and not the High Evolutionary. And then you have this Rocket story and maybe there was a way to tie that all in where that's the only way I could see Adam Warlock working with a more developed story. They would have had to have been the principal opposition, but if this is what you wanted the whole time was this High Evolutionary character and it was going to be about this Rocket Raccoon story and stuff like that, then yes, you have to move Adam Warlock to the side. He couldn't have been the principal opposition if this is ultimately where you were landing, you know?
And it depends because if you want Adam Warlock to be a part of the team later, you have to have a reason why he flips sides. And so if he's the principal antagonist, you have to then have another antagonist that they team up against to flip, which is we've seen in how many fucking movies? I mean, it's one of the main reasons why Batman versus Superman is kind of fucking sucky. Because you know exactly where it's going the whole movie. You know, like you see them like gearing up for them to fight. But there's no stakes because you know they're going to flip at the end. You know they're going to be teammates to go up against something, you know. And so it makes it weird because, you know, they stole that from a story where Superman and Batman had been friends for so long and then became enemies and fought. You started with them being enemies and fighting, knowing they're going to become friends. So I think that that's why they chose not to go that route. Because that's a tired trope in how many things. I mean, fuck, we just saw Godzilla versus Kong, you know, do that. So I think that that's kind of why they went that route is just have him be a weird side villain that's not completely a villain that just, it makes it easier for him to join the team, which I think is what Gunn's ultimate goal was either way.
I feel like, and maybe that's why for me, I think he did work a little bit better because he wasn't the main antagonist. And so I feel like he did kind of fit in with the humor and everything of Guardians movies but if he was the main villain, I probably would have felt differently about that, but because they had, High Evolutionary as that main villain, having this other antagonist who was kind of just silly and whatever, I think it worked for just the humor in general that the Guardians movies have. But I guess maybe that's why for me, he worked a little bit better than I guess he did for you guys.
No, those are all good points. And if you weren't going to have him as the main antagonist, you had his mom. So that could have been the flip thing if they wanted to do that. And that's the fair. Only reason why I bring it up is just because the way the second movie ended, back to that, it seemed like they were going to be the principal antagonist. That's where it seemed like we were going. You know, Rocket stole the batteries from their society. They were chasing them and stuff like that. They failed to get them in that movie because it all wound up being about ego. And it seemed like they were next in line. Which is why I'm even bringing up that in the first place with Adam Warlock, is just to try to make sure I'm making sure I'm understood with why I felt that way going into this one. It seemed like they were going to be positioned to be the main antagonist. Then we get to this and it's like, nope, they're not. You know, it's actually this guy that you don't know, which wound up being fine. The evolutionary was a good character and was developed well. And he coincided very well with this origin story that you were doing with Rocket and everything like that. So I'm still good with it, but I just want to put into perspective the jarring nature of that. You know, to me, I felt that. Maybe you guys didn't. Maybe y'all were just like, oh, cool, it's Adam Warlock, whatever. But to me, it felt like he was being set up to be positioned as that, you know? That's who I thought we were going to be fighting the way the second movie ended. But, you know, but it's neither here or there, just sort of kind of just expressing how I felt or why I felt that way about him.
No, that's all fair.
I guess the last thing I'll say, you know, moving on from that, the last thing I'll say is just about the High Evolutionary. I really like this character, man. I thought that he was a good villain. I really loved him early in the movie when he was a little more methodical, a little more manipulative, kind of showed some of the sort of lovable side that he had. But, you know, there was this hint of, you know, these ulterior motives and mischief and stuff like that. And I do think that when it got towards the end of the movie, that left and it was more like he was more of the just angry, yelling, demanding sort of villain. And I understand that villains must villain, but I really loved the manipulative kind of part of him early on. I think that's when he was best. And then they sort of had to do the thing. And Marvel does this a lot. They did this with Winter Soldier. They, with Falcon and the Winter Soldier, with that villain character and stuff like that. They do this thing where the villain sort of has to devolve into this one straight thing. They did it with Thanos. You know, initially Thanos was kind of this, you know, I'm doing this because I'm trying to bring balance to the universes and everything like that. And it was always this other motive of I'm trying to better the universe. But then by the time we get to Endgame, he had to be, and now granted it was a different Thanos, but he had to be the Thanos of, well, I don't care about all that anymore. I'm just going to kill all of y'all and take over y'all. So they do this often with the characters. So I just wanted to say that he did devolve a little bit, I think, towards the end, but it was okay. You know, it wasn't enough to where he was hammy or it didn't feel stupid or anything like that. It still fit the movie and it still worked well. But boy, that initial High Evolutionary man, that was like some high level shit. I was like, man, dude, this might be one of the best villains they've ever done. And I think him towards the end kind of prevents it from being like one of the best. But man, dude, initially, I was loving that character. I was loving everything about him. Oh, and the last thing I'll say about him, Bo, I love too how you sort of hinted, Sterling, or you talked about a little bit, the scene where the animal experiments were like selling meth and stuff like that. That was another thing I really loved about all that, that he was sort of trying to create this perfect society and everything, and was creating what he thought was this perfect society. But I loved how on Counter Earth, it was just mirroring a lot of what just happens on Earth. Like, even though these are people that you made and these science experiments and stuff like that, I love how even still, just by merit of it being a society and different people and different opinions and, different belief systems, and there were still poor ones and there were still drug sellers and there were still some that were, you know, I love how even though he did all these experiment things, it kind of just showed that, like, you can't make a perfect people, you know, because, you know, people are going people. Like, you know, you give people you give animals consciousness and you give them like human reasoning and stuff like that. And yeah, they may start peaceful, like they didn't ravage each other coming out of your experiment machine or whatever. But I like how still, because this society was set up a certain way and because they were all like integrated together, they still sort of mirrored the behaviors of just human beings, you know?
Well, it becomes like a weird, like, nature versus nurture argument. Like, you can make things that are genetically perfect, like, so on the nature side, but if there's no nurture, like, you're not nurturing the perfect society, you're just trying to genetically create it. So the psychology and the sociology would still end up with poverty and selfishness and greed and drug use and all the things that are prevalent in a society, no matter what you do, because you're not taking care of the psychological and sociological needs of your people.
Exactly.
You know,
very well said. Very well said.
And so it's a weird commentary on that, like, oh yeah, he psychologically and sociologically abandoned that society from the beginning and then went even further by just destroying the planet.
Yeah. And then was just like, oh yep, we'll just destroy it all and start over. And yeah, that's a great way to put it. And that ultimately was his flaw, which is why I do think he is a good villain, because of what it says about exactly what you just described. So I think though those are like the really good things about him. And then that line that Rocket said to him, you know, it's not, I forget exactly how, I'm going to abridge it, but when he told him, it's not that you want things, it's not about you wanting things to be perfect, or it's not about things not being perfect. You just don't like things the way they are. You know, you look so much at these genetic features and everything like that. But like you said, nurturing is about really getting to the heart of what a person is, what they are, the very specific things that they need, their mental health, et cetera, et cetera. And how, you know, you can't possibly create the perfect anything if all of that is if you don't focus on any of those things. So,
well,
I think that was just a great thing about that.
And it's a part of the other thematic elements of the movie too. Like, he's obsessed with Rocket because Rocket has creative based thinking and he wants to create that. And that's not something you can create. You can nurture it. You can nurture creativity in somebody, but you can't genetically just plug in that you will be creative and you will have exactly that creative logicking skills. I mean, sure, maybe, I don't know, eventually, maybe that is something we can genetically do. Maybe there are genetic components to some of that. But for the most part, that's something you have to nurture. You have to nurture creativity in something. You can't just go, you're going to be creative. Your mother was creative. I was creative. You're creative. And then just go be creative. you have to nurture creativity, you know? And I loved those thematic through points throughout the movie, and that's what he could not understand. He wanted people to have that type of intelligence to be able to creatively do the things that Rocket can. That Rocket, and it's like, it's an alternative version of creativity too, because it's just inventiveness. You know, that's not something I think that our society puts enough like credence into being that is creative. Just ability to create things from nothing, or to take things and modify them to create new things. I think that that's something that is not fostered as much as some of the other forms of creativity, but just that having that ability, and like he recognizes that in Rocket, but he doesn't give anything else a chance to do that. You know, maybe if Counter-Earth, maybe if he had just let them develop for another 50, 60, 70 years, 100 years, they would have been a society of Rocket Raccoons, that they could have done that. You have to let them get that. Just because something can do that early on doesn't mean other things can't with time. You know, like everybody loves to give all the credits to somebody like Albert Einstein or all these other things that like people in the past that like, oh, they were so smart, they were able to figure this out. That doesn't mean that they were the only people that could ever figure it out. You know what I mean? Other people probably could figure it out too later. It's just, you know what I mean? And it's like when people try to compare children, they're like, oh, mine was talking at, you know, two. I don't know when children start talking. I'm just saying. Or they're like, you know, like, oh, Beethoven created his first symphony at four. Okay. But that doesn't mean that there's not a composer out there that doesn't write their first symphony till they're 20. That also might not be an amazing composer that changes how we look at music. That's still possible, yeah, even if they didn't do it at four. True. You know,
true. And I think also a part of Rocket's reasoning and why he was able to figure that out was because of, like you said, the nurturing that was going on within the cells with Lila and the other friends that he had made. He was having a very specific life with those specific animals and still was sort of, and his perspective was being shaped by the nurturing that and those friendships that he had in there. And that was the part that the high evolutionary didn't understand. It wasn't just that you made him and gave him all these genetic gifts and everything like that, and he just figured this out because of you just made him that way. Like, a part of that too was those friendships and those things and that all of that was shaping his creativity and his reasoning and how he looks at things. All of that was part of it. And the high evolutionary just missed that.
They also do a really great job of retconning something that they've had as a character trait of Rocket's throughout the movies. He's obsessed with cybernetic limbs throughout the franchise.
Yeah.
And in this movie, you find out why. His friends were composed also of cybernetic implants.
Yeah.
And that's like his weird connection to them.
Yeah.
Still. And so it's just a tiny little detail that is a great little through point of Rocket's story. You know, why is he obsessed with Bucky's cybernetic arm? Because Lila had cybernetic arms. It's a little thing like that.
Yeah.
That's a nice little thing.
That's really cool. And I even think about the first or the second movie when he was like, get that guy's eye or.
Well, that was the first movie when he's like, and I need that guy's leg.
First movie. Yeah. I need that guy's leg and I need that. Yeah. Yeah.
And they get him his leg and he's like, all right, here's his leg. And he's like, yeah, that's great. And they're like, what are you going to use it for? He's like, I just wanted it.
Yeah. And then he was laughing. That guy's going to wake up in the morning and. Wonder where his leg is, you know, man, you know, yeah. But yeah, all of that goes together. It definitely does. So yeah, I think I'm done just talking about things that I liked and didn't like. Oh, and last thing I'll say is that scene though, when Lila and all of them get shot up, that was sad. And it wasn't even like you hear gunshots and you just see legs or arms, or maybe they do a close up of the face and you get a last words from them or something. That, I mean, they just straight up showed those dead animal bodies shot up. So I guess I do get some of people going, man, that was too much. And then, you know, they're talking in all these cute voices. Oh, you know, they're talking and singing songs and, you know, talking about what is your name going to be? Which was a great scene, too. How they came up with their names and stuff like that. And him going, you know, I'm going to be with my friends in space. So I'm going to call myself Rocket. All of that was good stuff. So I think that they just really like pulled on the heartstrings with all the voice acting and the acting and stuff. And yeah, seeing those animals just shot up with bullet holes and just laying there in a pool of blood was, it was nothing for me, but yeah, I could see how maybe some families, some kids, some people could be like, oh shit. So I will say that they straight up showed those dead bodies with holes in them. So I at least wanted to be fair to some of the people chirping that.
I do have some quick questions for you guys. So at the end of this movie, when you hear Groot say, I love you guys, do you think that was Groot speaking in English? Or do you think that that was a point of the audience finally understanding Groot?
I think it's the second one.
That's where I lean, because the characters didn't react to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's not like everybody else went, you spoke in English.
Yeah. It was just normal for them.
Yeah. That's why I think he said, I am Groot. And that's kind of us finally understanding Groot is what it's implying.
Yeah.
That's why I hope
that's it.
I mean, I just think with how James Gunn is, I think that that's what it is. If he wanted it to be, he spoke in English for the first time, he would have had the characters react. You know, yeah. I think that it's like we had a Gamora moment at the end of the movie. Is what I
think. Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I like that. I hope that that was it, because that's pretty damn cool. Because you're right. None of the characters went, I reacted. I went, oh shit, he spoke English. But you're right. None of the characters did. So it would make sense that I like that. I do. I like that is us finally understanding him, his I am Groot. That's pretty cool. I hope that that's it.
And then one other question. So the first mid-credit sequence, or the mid-credit sequence, not the end credit, the mid-credit, when, you know, they had the new Guardians and all this other stuff. Is it just not a little weird that they spent most of the movie going, hey, guys, you know, just because that we consider them lower life forms doesn't mean they are. But then they were about to just kill a bunch of alien, I don't know, wildebeests. I don't know what the fuck they were. They's just about to go kill them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a little weird to me. That they were like, hey, guys, let's just go kill all these alien cougars or whatever the fuck they were. Like, it's the same thing. They just weren't earth animals.
Right. Yeah.
That was a little jarring to me. I think that they should have been like bandits or something. You know what I mean? Like just like a criminal gang, like a Wild West criminal gang coming to take over a town, and the Guardians were just going to fuck them up. I think that that would have made more sense. It would have been more on par with it. But it was just kind of weird that they were just like, these alien coyotes, let's just go murder them, because they're not earth coyotes. Right. That's what we care about in this movie.
Good point.
I mean, it's a fine scene. It's just, it's weird that that happened at the end of this movie.
No, you have a point. And that's just a common thing that we tend to do. Oh, they're aliens. We can just kill it. You know, we could just kill all of it and all of that stuff.
Like I said, alien blood means nothing in a movie.
Yep. It means absolutely nothing. They're just aliens. So you can do whatever you want to them. So, but yeah, you do have a point, especially with that whole message about every life matters and stuff like that. And then clearly they just don't.
They forgot the message of the movie 5 minutes after it ended. The credits started and the message of the movie got forgot. I just was wondering if that was as jarring to you guys as it was me. I was just like, that's a weird thing at the end of this movie. If it was at the end of Guardians 2, totally would have understood it. But at the end of this one, I was like, how did you guys feel about the MCU's first fuck?
I thought it was funny. I think, like, my initial thought was, like, I think it's funny that they're doing it, but I also was like, maybe it should have been used in a better moment. Like, maybe Rocket could have said it in the midst of something happening that, you know, like, I'm tired of effing running or was something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think they could have used it like that, and I feel like part of me feels like maybe that would have been a better use of it. But also part of me is like, you know what? If anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Star-Lord. So that kind of also makes sense. Like I liked it though. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. I thought it was funny. Like he dropped it and I went, wait, it took a moment because I was like, wait a second. Did he just say what I think he said? And then I remembered, oh, well, in PG-13, you get one, right? Like, you can say it.
You get one as long as you're not referring to people fucking. They're so weird with their arbitrary rules. So, like, the best example I've ever heard was on an episode of Adam Ruins Everything, where if a character says, fuck you, in a PG-13 movie, that's fine. But if they say, I'm gonna fuck you, that's not fine.
Crazy. So it's the sexual censorship.
Yes.
Man, we're so weird about that.
But man, you can so have somebody get stuff. Blown the fuck up.
Dude, yeah, exactly. Like, what the hell? But no, I thought it was pretty funny. Like, him just being like, open the fucking... I thought it was funny.
Get in the fucking car then.
Yeah, it was funny. And it was relatable because we all know what a car is, but she did it. And then in that moment, he was just like, man, come on, you know? So I thought it was funny, man. And I mean, Chris Pratt just really delivered it, you know?
Well, so here's the story behind that too. A, that was improv. He ad-libbed that.
That's tight.
Sounds about right for Chris Pratt.
And so he did that and they really liked it. And, you know, apparently it did break people. Like people did laugh after he said that because it was just out of nowhere. It was like, because it's supposed to be like, well, just get in the car. And he was like, get in the fucking car then. And so then afterwards, when Kevin Feige saw the movie, he's like, went to James Gunn and he was like, do you really want to be the first person to put the word fuck in the MCU? And in James Gunn fashion, it's like, yes. Yes, I do.
Of course he does.
I'm James motherfucking Gunn. Yes. I just, to me, as smart as Kevin Feige can be, that is also one of the dumbest questions to ask James Gunn. Like, the answer is obviously yes. You know, I just thought that was kind of funny. That's just the little story behind that.
Cool.
But outside of that, you guys got any more thoughts about this here Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3?
Nope.
No, sir.
Real quick, shout out to Cinefans. Our Cinefan score for this movie is a 90, or is an A, I should say, because that's how we did it. It's an A. Overwhelmingly got A's. Somebody randomly threw a D in there. But then they gave no explanation. I was like, if you're being that far off.
Yeah, I saw that. Something. I was like, interesting. Okay.
And then I was reading through the comments on your post about it, Justin, and somebody said the High Evolutionary was just like Kane and or Kang in Ant-Man. It sucked. I was like, the only good thing in Ant-Man, and you're like, it sucked?
Yeah, like what? I don't understand that.
I want that guy's list of the best MCU villains. If Kang and the High Evolutionary are on the low side, I mean, to me, High Evolutionaries, I mean, I get what you're saying, Justin, with how he devolved. I was okay with it because of the obsessive nature of him. To me, that was the most sensical de-evolution of a villain, was that to me, because he's just one track minded. He's obsessed with this idea. So if he tries to get it softly, it doesn't work. He'll blow up a planet and start over again. And especially where he sees his goal slipping away, he devolves because of that. To me, that was the most logical one of all of them, or not of all of them, I should say, but to me, that one made a lot of sense. But I mean, to me, he's at least top five Marvel villains. If I'm just doing a quick off the top of my head list, he's top five. He was great. You know, just even on a performance level, on a just an acting performance level, he's up there.
Yeah. I mean, him showing just how unhinged he was becoming, like he did that really well. Yeah, I agree with you.
You know, I just, that was the weirdest thing. They're like, he was just like Kang. And I'm like, oh, he really liked it. He sucked. Not where I saw that sentence going. But yeah, I just wanted to say, we've been polling Cinefans for the last few movies, and we haven't shouted out what their score was. So I was like, oh, we need to start that. But yeah, so the Cinefan score on this was an A. I really want to see how many Cinefans have watched the movies we're going to do next week. I think we'll be the first three to see them in general. Yeah, I don't think three people have seen those movies combined. I think we will be the first three to at least especially watch both of them. I don't think there are three people in the world that have watched both of those movies. It'll be us. It'll be a first, a world exclusive. Somebody watched both of those movies. I think it's going to be, because I think, what movie did I do that? Oh, Renfield. I was like, I didn't even ask what were your grades on Renfield. I was like, did you watch it?
Yeah. I don't think we got a yes on that, did we?
No, we did not. I think we were the first three people to see that movie. That was one of the weirder episodes. I'm just like, I don't think anyone is watching this movie. I thought it was going to be a huge movie because, you know, you got Nicolas Cage as a Dracula. I'm like, that's at least got to be, you know, $75 million in box office alone. Just Nicolas Cage as a Dracula. No one watched it. Just no one. I think we are like 47% of its worldwide box office.
Because the people like me, man, they don't get down with that Laffy Taffy Dracula, man. No Laffy Taffy Dracula. I want angry, angry, hungry, hungry Dracula. No Laffy Taffy.
Justin, I think you're sleeping on the funny Dracula. Just go back and watch Dracula Dead and Loving It, man. It holds up surprisingly well.
Does it?
Did you end up finally watching it?
It's just as good as it was when it came out. The only bad thing about that is if you didn't like it when it came out, it's the same movie. So it won't necessarily change your mind. But if you liked it when it came out, you'll like it again. But that's the problem, is it will not change your mind.
Okay. And Leslie Nielsen was always a lot of fun, man.
And to me,
I have a love for the Naked Guns. I don't know. I bet they're, I don't even want to go back and watch those and see. I hope I don't think they're bad now.
I will say this.
I just remember loving those movies.
To me, the Naked Gun movies hold up. I've watched them within the last year. I own all three.
Okay.
They hold up.
Okay.
With the exception of the most obvious thing is O.J. Simpson. Like,
yeah.
There's the O.J. in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, I do think they hold up still. I think they're very good. And to me, I think the reason why I loved Dracula Dead and loving it so much, especially after rewatching it, is it to me, it was the perfect storm of Leslie Nielsen and Mel Brooks.
Mm.
When I was younger, that was peak comedy.
Yeah.
There was nothing better than a Mel Brooks or a Leslie Nielsen movie as far as pure comedy went. And it was the perfect combination of both, you know? And I think that that's why it stuck with me is to me, like 1994 to 1998 humor, that is pinnacle, was weirdly Dracula Dead and loving it. And I do understand. I am probably the only person in the world that thinks that was peak comedy at any point in time. But it was to me. It was so perfect in that regard. I mean, because I'll still, like, every once in a while, you got to watch Robin Hood Men in Tights. It hits.
That one's still great.
It's so good. And you know, and like, and I think as much as I know we did nostalgia recently, but I mean, I know there's controversy. Like if you look at it from a nowadays lens with something like Blazing Saddles, but that was also the point. It wasn't to be malicious or to have controversy. It was to jab at the people that he was making fun of with it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it was to jab at them. Like, oh, you don't like interracial relationships? I'm going to have a woman that is so horny for this guy. And yes, does he take it sometimes a little too far with it? Yeah, but he really wanted to just kind of shove it in people's faces. Mm. Like, that was the point of it. And just, yeah. I don't know. I watched Dracula Dead and loving it. I bought it when we did Renfield. I finally watched it last week. And to me, it holds up. I might be the only person in the world that goes, it holds up, because I'm probably the only person that thought it held anything.
No, I remember really liking that movie as a kid.
You know, because like for it to hold up, it has to be up. I don't know, Heather. You might not like it. Now, to you, it might not hold up. I mean, to me, like I said, I don't think it will change any minds. I don't think if you liked it, I don't think you won't like it now, and vice versa. I don't think it'll change your mind, Justin. I don't think it'll flip. I just think it'll maintain whatever you thought. You know, if I was like a kid and I gave it like an 83, it is exactly an 83 still.
Gotcha.
But I do say, watch the Naked Guns again, man. They surprisingly do hold up too. Like they really do. Like I said, with the exception of the OJ in the room, that is still awkward. Cause you're watching it going, man, especially when you're watching Naked Gun 33 and a third, you're like, oh, in like 4 months you murder people. Like it's that, like, it's just like, this was like a year before you murdered people. It's so awkward like that. The older ones.
I know I'm laughing. I'm not laughing at the murder. It's just I'm laughing at how you said that and just how true that kind of is to be watching that and going, man, just in a few months, man, this dude goes buck wild. Like
he murders people. Yeah. He goes on the most epic car chase in history. Like he essentially, for no pun intended, he murdered a car line also. Like, it took the Bronco decades to come back from him.
Yep.
Especially white. I'm surprised they even make the new Bronco in white.
I know.
Just the idea of them making a new white Bronco is mind-boggling. And I know people want to have controversy and be like, oh, he didn't do it, all this other stuff. I just want to go real quick and tell you why I know he did it. That motherfucker wrote a book saying, if I did it. Come on. He did it. He did it. That's how you know he did it. Because he got away with it and then wrote that book.
Yeah. When he wrote that book, I was like, what the hell, bro?
I mean, you could have any theories you want. It's just that motherfucker wrote that book, if I did it. And as far as I know, he just wrote out the crime. Like, he just wrote it. It's just the exact same. It never got to be published because of that whole the Son of Sam law. Like, you can't profit off a crime type of thing, that whole scenario. But, yeah, he did it. Like, come on. Just come on. And then also, the other reason why I know he does it is because every time he, like, whenever he goes to jail and gets out of jail, he just has to end up coming back and going, hey, guys, the juice is back. I'm like, come on, dude. Nobody that is not a murderer does that. That is strictly murderer behavior.
Pretty much.
But yeah, outside of that, and two, also, it's like, The Last Naked Gun is also early 90s Anna Nicole Smith. And that's always fun too.
That's
always a fantastic thing to see.
I remember the movie posters where he was like doing the, like he was standing on bullets and his legs are all the way apart.
He's like, he's almost like skiing on them.
Yeah. He's like skiing on bullets. It's like, I always like those posters.
I kind of feel like at some point we need to just do an episode about the three Naked Gun movies. I mean, we're sitting here talking about it. Man, you remember that scene when in the first one when they're like, we need to have safe sex and they get those full body condoms.
Full body condoms.
Oh, that is,
and they're just rolling around.
Fucking perfection, man. Like, we're just sitting here talking about the movie and I'm just thinking about them in the full body condoms. That's great shit, man.
It was great, dude. Oh, man, I laugh at that. Every time I see it, I laugh. Every time they get that scene.
Man, and that scene, whenever he's the ump at the game and he just starts getting even crazier and crazier with each call. Yeah. Oh, it's fucking great shit. I know what I'm doing this weekend.
Man, I think I know what I'm doing too. On top of the two movies that nobody is going to watch, that we have to watch.
The two movies no one asked for. We'll be watching those and talking about them next week. But in between, maybe it's like watch a Naked Gun, watch one of those. Watch a Naked Gun, watch one of those. You know, to break up the shit we're going to be watching.
Yes.
And also, the Naked Guns are kind of horror movies. They have murderers in them. Anyway, on that note, thank you guys for listening to this episode of the Cinema Slayers podcast. Check us out on the internet at www.cinemaslayers.com. Cinema Slayers podcast on Facebook. Cinema_Slayers on Twitter and Instagram. Cinema Slayers Pod on TikTok. At Cinema Slayers Pod on YouTube. Give us a 5-star rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. It really help us out. Shout out to Plug Migo and Mundo Ochoa for our theme song and logos, respectively. Tell your family, tell your friends, tell your friends' family, tell your family's friends. And most of all, tell those dear sweet mothers, because dear sweet mothers love
Rocket Raccoon.
That's fair. Just remember, here at the Cinema Slayers podcast, we are both pro-slut and pro-Sydney. And as always, as I end the YouTube videos, the TikToks, and this podcast, just remember, according to Jastin, Moon Knight is the Best Picture winner. I ask people to remember so much at the end of this episode, every episode. It's just a checklist of shit to remember till next week. I need to figure out a different way to say it. I've been... We've been doing this for 5 fucking years. And for what, 4.5 of it, I've been ending with Jastin says Moon Knight was the best picture winner.
Yeah.
And we've just been adding more shit to it. Oh, man. Yeah, we're at 5
you
years.
You got a point. That's crazy.
I noticed that the other day. Yep.
That's tight.
5 years.
Yeah. Oh, man. Man, oh, man. And Jastin still thinks Moon Knight won a best picture. 5 years later, he still doesn't know what actually did.
Hey, Moon Knight was good.
It wasn't.
So Heather and I was. We liked it.
I'm wearing a Moon Knight fucking watch right now.
Yes.
Where's your Burger King watch? I heard the saddest news of all time. They're going to close like 100 Burger Kings. Did you hear that?
Jastin, I fucking said that.
An article, no, but like an article was going around saying 100. Like,
I know. I brought that up.
Was it the same one? I thought you said a few. I didn't realize it was 100.
Because it's two different franchisees are closing a shit ton of their stores. One of them's closing like 45 or something like that. The other one's closing like 30 something. And then someone else is closing another 20. But yeah, it's like 100 of them are closing. Yeah. But I brought that up, Jastin. It's also just what I said was going to happen. I said they were going to be closing down, Jastin. I said that Burger King is going to die.
Man,
you could have just been assuming that that was Sterling's just anticipation of it. So maybe that's why you didn't realize that it was for real.
Maybe I just thought he was kind of talking shit. I guess I didn't know, like,
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
To the extent of what you were saying was real or not. But then I saw that article and it was like, man. And I went to the comment section expecting everybody to stand up proudly for Burger King and say, I love Burger King. They shouldn't close. And that's not exactly what the comments reflected.
They were most like, of them just like good riddance or I haven't ate there in 20 years. Who cares?
Yes. A lot of people were like, I can't remember the last time I went to Burger King. And then, but then a guy said they stopped flame broiling their Whoppers. And that's when I stopped going. I didn't know that. And then I thought about it and I was like, they don't really advertise that anymore.
Okay. They do on the packaging. What it is they used to actually do like a broiler, like an actual broiler. They'd put them in and it'd be a broiler. Now, like I said, it's that conveyor belt fucking thing. It's still technically a flame broiler. It's just not the way they used to do it. They just put in the little frozen patties and it goes through the conveyor belt and now they're cooked on the other end. That's all they do. And their meat inherently, I think, has liquid smoke in it too to add to that flavor. They are technically still flame broiled. It's just not the old way they used to do it. You know?
Okay.
And that's how people just fucking are. They don't flame broil it the same way they did in 1962. So it obviously tastes different. And you're like, well, you know, technology changes. It's okay. Yeah.
Okay. Cause I heard that and I was like, is that true? And I didn't notice a drop off in taste. Cause when I taste, it just tastes good to me and Child Heather. So.
She didn't even have a flame broiled burger back then, Jastin. Remember, she had chicken fries.
No,
they're not flame broiled chicken fries, Jastin. I hate to break it to you.
Damn it.
It's kind of in the name, fry.
Damn it. I tried Burger King. I tried.
But the problem is you're not trying to go to one of their fucking restaurants and order food. Between last week and this week, how many times did you eat Burger King, Jastin? Yep.
I thought about it a lot.
You give them a bunch of imaginary money that they're going to put in their imaginary bank accounts and save themselves?
Man, why don't people just go there? I don't understand.
Justin, you don't even go yourself. I mean... Is it that whole do as I say, not as I do thing? Like, go and so other people need to go eat Burger King. So if I decide to go there in the next 10 years, I still can.
It's just, I mean, I just don't want to live in a world where it doesn't exist. I mean, Burger King, you drive by, it's there. You just,
it's not open. I do love that. But it's there.
I do love that in like any of this. That Justin still hasn't said, okay, you know what? Actually, I am going to go there. Like, he still hasn't even said
he
that.
He still won't go there.
He's like, man, yeah, nope, still haven't gone. But man, this is sad. Like, he still hasn't been like, you're right, I need to go. He just still hasn't even said he's going to do it.
This is a capitalist society. You have to actually, like, spend money somewhere for it to stay open.
But I just like that it's there, you know? I mean, it should exist, you know?
Well,
it should exist. I want to be able to see it and know that it exists.
If I ever like, make enough
like
money,
koala
Justin,
bears, like I don't make... have to own a koala bear, but it's nice to see them and know they exist. Look at them smiling there. It's the same way with Burger King. I want to drive by and be like,
you do know that like BK. A lot of koalas have chlamydia.
Just raining on his parade today.
They can't give them medicine to cure it because it'll also kill the bacteria they have in their stomach to eat eucalyptus and to actually properly digest it. So yeah, a lot of koalas have chlamydia. All right, Justin, I'll make a deal with you. If I ever make enough money, I will buy a Burger King. I'll close it, don't worry. But the building will be there, and it will always be there. I'll maintain the outside of the building, give it a fresh coat of paint every once in a while, make sure the sign's in working order. It'll just never be open, but it'll be a Burger King, so it'll always be there. It'll be there. You could drive by and see a Burger King. Can't eat the Burger King, but you can see it.
I like that. That feels like a better world.
And it's the only acceptable form of Burger King that exists. It's a building that serves no food.
I hate you. Of course you would spend money to do that.
I would gladly do that just to show you, Justin. Be like, yeah, Justin, this is the perfect Burger King according to you. It exists. And man, by the time I have that amount of money, Burger King will be out of existence, so I will have the world's only Burger King, and I will essentially be the owner of Burger King, the company.
They don't need to give up. I mean, maybe it's just time for desperate measures. Maybe just get pay somebody to get a new recipe in there, you know?
I hate to break it to you, Justin.
Gordon Ramsay or like, the Barefoot Contessa or somebody.
This is the definition of desperate measures. They're just like, we have to close so we can have some money.
Some money. Man, people like Burger King. Nobody in the comments liked it, but that's just a small thousands of people.
That's fine. I'm sure according to our poll, there's 7 people in the world that like it. So...
And 7 is a holy number, you know?
Thoughts and prayers for Burger King then, I guess.
Come on, dude. They're not dead. Please don't die.
Thoughts and prayers. Not ordering food, just thoughts and prayers. Next time I drive by Burger King, I'll stop. I'll pull over into the parking lot. Say a quick prayer. No, go to McDonald's. And eat food.
Oh, man. Why did I open my big mouth?
I think it's funny. You're opening your big mouth like that, but you won't open your big mouth for a fucking Whopper.
Look, I love the idea of Burger King. No, I'm kidding.
That's what it is, Justin. You just like the idea of Burger King, that you can have it your way. It's flame broiled. They have fries made of chicken.
That children like.
And just, you know, but nobody eats it. You're like a weird high evolutionary, but for Burger King. Just accept it, Justin. It's
oh no, that's true.
Going away.
No, just get Gordon Ramsay in there. Somebody to just whip up something for them or something. You know, just maybe that's what they need. The Gordon Whopper or something. Just something. The Barefoot Contessa Whopper or something.
I don't know if you should use the Barefoot Contessa. There was a child that was like wanting to do a Make-A-Wish to meet her because she was his favorite, you know, TV chef. And she straight up told him no until she started getting bad press about it. And then she tried to get him to come then. And he was like, no, you're mean to me. I was dying.
Man. Well.
So, yeah, just, I guess you're right. She is the best person to make a Whopper.
Well, in her defense, what was she doing? Was she at Burger King by any chance when the guy asked? I mean, sometimes you just got to finish your food first before you can give somebody a real yes or no.
That woman has never stepped foot in a Burger King, and you damn well know it. It's their rules, Justin. No shoes, no shirt, no service. She's barefoot.
She is barefoot.
I don't think Burger King should be that picky. I think they should just allow anyone that wants to come in regardless of shirt, shoes, or anything. But, you know.
Shoot, a cat, dog, a whatever at this point.
Well, man. There's going to be 100 less Burger Kings for me to potentially drive by and not eat. That is kind of sad now that I think about it, Justin. There's 100 less places for me just to not eat at anyway.
What kind of world are we coming to? If the world lets go of Burger King, that's a world I don't think I want to live in.
Well, you better get used to it. It's what you got like 3 years left. All right. I'm done with this for tonight.
Yeah, we're done. God.